Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is Dan Rowntz and I'm joined by a banana-eating Matt Kendrick. Matt, are you well? Yeah, thumbs up because his mouth's full of banana. We'll get to you in a minute. Aston Villa, 1-1 with Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. There'll be more waffling in this podcast than a Jim Beglin commentary session. You just asked me, Matt, off air, how do I open a banana, from the top or the bottom? The correct answer is from the bottom. So if that's what you were waiting for, you pinch the bottom and peel the sides open. It's a superior way. Are you well?
Yeah. I didn't think we'd be debating the correct way to open a banana, but actually just feel a bit more. I've only got a little bit more left.
Jeez. All right. Well, what are people saying this evening? I thought personally, that's a good point and I'm happy with that. I think given the recent form with four clean sheets in a row, it was always going to give at some point and we concede. And I think if I'm right, that's the first time this season we've picked up any points after going behind. So that's a nice little monkey to get off our back as well, because I think after being under pressure in the last few minutes, the old Villa might have buckled there and we'd have conceded another and lost. So to come away with a point against Chelsea, good run at Christmas time, and with an unchanged side, I'm happy with that. We now go into 2021, Man United on New Year's Day, feeling positive in fifth place.
Yeah, I was really encouraged by it. And if you've only really got to look at the fact that Chelsea made, was it half a dozen changes?
Six, I think.
We made one. Oh, sorry, not six. Not half a dozen. Six to one, half a dozen to the other. And Villa made one, and it was one enforced change. And yet, just when we thought, and the commentators were suggesting that we've got nothing left in the tank, conjured up a goal and then found some more energy. So I think it's, not only a Villa above Chelsea, albeit very narrowly, and I've got two games in hand on them, mm-hmm. but think of the vast squad that Frank Lampard's got at his disposal. And think how Dean Smith and John Terry and Craig Shakespeare and whoever else, Richard O'Kelly and the fitness staff are getting every last drop out of this team at the moment. I know John McGinn won was named man of the match, wasn't he, by Jim Beglin, which was a fair shout because a year ago Villa lost him, didn't they? He was crocked, I think, was it against Southampton around Christmas time, and missed that energy. And considering he had a serious injury, he's cranked himself back into gear brilliantly, I think, in so far this season. And just wish that one had flown in off his left boot into the corner.
What a rocket that was. It's such a good effort. Talking of good efforts as well, the Jacob Ramsey one was so close. I think it was his first touch, maybe his second touch after playing it forward as soon as he comes on. That was very close. That would have been a great introduction back into the Villa side for him. Just quickly on Ezri Konsa, there's a couple of comments that I've just seen coming in about him throwing his body all over the place. I thought I was a little bit, not apprehensive, because he had to play because of the Ming situation, but because he'd missed a few games through illness, whatever that illness was, you still think, oh, if he comes back, he might not be the same. But he just came in, started back as he was. Matty Cash still performing excellently. Matty Target, again, had a very good game. And as you mentioned, John McGinn, I think today and in the last couple of games in particular, he's back to his best now. I saw some stats that Villa posted in a tweet a few minutes ago before we came on air. If I can quickly find it and fill for the next couple of seconds while I find it. 59 touches, 22 passes completed, 3 tackles won, 2 successful dribbles, 2 aerial duels won, 2 key passes, 1 interception, 1 clearance and 1 shot, which was on target because it hit the crossbar.
And apart from Gina Petri, it wasn't on target, it was off target because it hit the crossbar. If it was on target, it would have gone in under the crossbar, but I'm not going to get dragged into that one again. I think there's a lot of people being very, very optimistic before this game, thinking that Villa could go and roll over Chelsea, who have been in bad form, and then go and take it to Manchester United on Friday or whenever New Year's Day falls.
Yeah.
And, people who have listened, regular listeners and viewers, will know that I like to bring a dollop of pessimism or realism, depending what you think about it. I just kept, I don't know why, but Villa was so good against Crystal Palace that it kept playing over in my mind that when Villa beat Liverpool under Lambert, away at Anfield, and I think they went to Stamford Bridge the week after and got battered 8-0. And I just thought, listen, if Villa can go and compete and kind of, you know, show that they can match Chelsea, then I'll take that today. I'd have taken it even if we'd have lost the game. But I think Villa went and competed with a very jaded 11 and showed ambition to try and go and win the game as well. I thought Villa started best. I thought Villa, you know, I thought until Chelsea scored, I thought Villa probably edged it. And, you know, there were chances when that Chilwell one just whizzed wide for the last kick of the game or however late in the game, I thought, oh, God, I did think that was going to kind of, you know, smash into the top corner. But I thought it was a, you know, people probably think I should perhaps dare to dream a little bit more and think Villa can go there and kind of win the game comfortably. But I thought it was as good a performance as we could have. I don't know. Listen, of course they could have gone there and done a, you know, when Villa went to Arsenal and beat them, or when we ripped open Liverpool, or when we did a bit of a smash and grab at Leicester. But, you know, these games, without labouring the point, for a squad that is probably a 15-man squad at best.
I'm
really chuffed with it. I'm probably as pleased with that as I am with the win over Crystal Palace on Boxing Day, albeit for different reasons.
Yeah, I think it shows a different side for Villa that we did have to, I don't think grind it out is the right word, but we were under pressure in that last 10 or 15 minutes and we still managed to find a way to hold out. I think Emi Martinez is a big part of that pretty much everything that comes his way, he catches. Even when he dives for a save, he doesn't parry it out or palm it away. He brings it down and holds it in. I think he must bring a lot of confidence, that back form we spoke about him loads. It's a question here from Anthony Burford, who says, what did you think of Bertrand Traoré? Many Villa fans online were slighting him, whereas the commentators were very complimentary. It's an interesting conflict of opinion. I think it felt like we've had...
Anthony then? Did you call him Anthony?
That's Anthony. Anthony Burford, I said.
I thought you pronounced the H then, which was
might have done. Sorry, Anthony, if I did. I've burnt my
tongue.
You might. A bit weird.
Anthony might pronounce the H, but I don't like. I think it's a silent H. What's the question? Traoré.
The question is Traoré. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought he was okay. You know, I think the commentators dug him out a little bit actually for not giving Matty Cash enough protection down that flank.
For giving Chilwell too much space on the left. I don't think they mention that too often.
Yeah, only about 16 times. I thought he was okay. Obviously, you know, he's burst back into the team, hasn't he, in recent weeks. He's scored a couple of times and, you know, he's looked really impressive. I don't think it was that kind of game today where he was going to kind of get that much freedom to go and impose his game. I thought he was decent. I mean, I'm going to have a little look at our expert in the field, Ash, to see what his player rating said. I, without guessing, I'd have said Traoré a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd say 6 as well.
Let's have a look what Ash has said.
Michael Hudson's just asked me if I've got any side left. I haven't. Well, I have. It's in the fridge, but it's a Monday night. Well, is it a bank holiday? Is it a bank holiday today? It is, isn't it?
Is it a bank holiday? I think it does, because Boxing Day fell on a weekend.
Yeah, I've been working, so I've not been drinking today, whereas I wasn't working Boxing Day. Well, I worked the Villa game, that was it. So now just water for me tonight, and I've put a little bit of lip balm on because I've got dry lips in the winter. I don't know where this podcast is going while I'm filling for you, faffing around, but I keep leaving lip balm on the glass. If anyone sees the glass being dirty, it's lip balm, not my dirty mouth. Have you found out the player ratings yet? Because I've run out of things to say.
Can you talk us through your beauty regime a bit more, mate? I'm just scrolling down. Burn 6 out of 10.
Yeah,
Couldn't handle Ben Chilwell at all. The England left-back really fancied his chance to get forward and did so at will, crossing into the box relentlessly, which was the source of Chelsea's first goal. Traoré was lackadaisical defensively and left Cash fighting a two-man battle on his own, knowing you already had Pulisic to contend with. So, yeah, sounds fair to me, Ash.
Yeah, good one, Ash.
Why don't we just read out Ash's stuff on here rather than...
Yeah, good. I can just go to sleep then.
Bring a bit more authority and a bit more kind of expertise then rather than me waffling on.
I think I think what I like about Traore going forward is his unpredictability. Me and Dad were saying this as we were watching it. I feel like even he doesn't know what he's going to do sometimes. You know, those players that they're just whooping it around out of nowhere and they have really tight control out of nowhere. And it's like, how did he even get through there? And like the goal against whoever it was, Albion, I think when he just rolled it in. Things like that is what I like to his game, whereas Trezeguet is very different. He would have tracked back today against Chilwell and been a different kind of player. But that's what a squad game's all about, different players for different games.
Yeah, well, I call it the Paolo one-chop effect, that the unpredictable, it probably might be a bit before your time, Paolo one-chop, but it was that kind of, you know, you do a step over and you actually accidentally kick the ball against your own heel, takes out two defenders, and then you scuff one into the far corner. What about the winger on the other side? 5 goals in 5 games. Now, what did he, you tell me your thoughts on him. I want to see how many goals he scored last season.
Well, you find that out. I'll have a guess. I think he only got something like 6 all season, maybe even less than that. I seem to remember seeing something like he got 4 in 37 or something, and then he got 4 in 4 this year or something like that. So maybe it's 4. I really like him, which I don't think is necessarily true. I really want to like him. He frustrates me a little bit sometimes, but you can't argue with 5 goals in 5 games and important goals in games as well. That's earned us a point today. He scores twice against the Albion. I like him. He's doing a good job. I think I would prefer Jack Grealish to be out down the left and Ross Barkley coming back into the middle, which I think we'll probably see against Man United. But then that raises the question, can El Ghazi be dropped when he's scoring 5 and 5?
Well, can you tell us a bit more about your lip balm, mate? I haven't been able to find his goal from last season yet. Hang on.
just poor from you. Carl McClutchie says it was 6 last season. So if that's correct, I was also correct. Is that correct, Matt?
He did score 6 goals last season, yeah.
Yes. Knowledge,
including
is that cup goals, two, as well?
Including two in the cups, one in the League Cup against Wolves, and one in the FA Cup as Villa exited the competition at the third round stage against Fulham. I mean, one of them was a consolation penalty against Man City in the last minute. So he's already scored more in the Prem this season than he managed last season, which, good on him.
Is that your analysis? I have to fill for that time and then you just say, good on him. What do you think? Does he stay in the side?
I think he should stay in the side. Well, did you say, should he stay in the side?
Yeah, because Barkley can play again now, can't he? Because he couldn't play tonight. He's back fit again. Him or Trezeguet has to come out the side for Barkley to come in, and surely Barkley's a no-brainer.
You mean Traore, don't you? You've got your Trez mixed up again.
I've done it again. I'm in Traore.
I think you've got to leave El Ghazi in there. I don't think he sends out the right. Yeah, you've only scored 5 in 5, El Ghazi. Come on, get your act together. I think he deserves to. He's...
I want to see what the comments say, because I think Barkley would come straight back in, I think.
Well, he probably could come back straight back in, but I'd leave Traore out ahead of leaving El Ghazi out.
And put El Ghazi on the right.
Yeah, what did you think of the finish? By the way, I do love a Megs on a goalkeeper.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, he's always at the back post as well, isn't he, El Ghazi? That seems to be his preferred position. It was a great ball by Cash, by the way.
Yeah, it was a great
very
ball.
Good ball. A couple of comments here. Joe Williams says Barkley's too good to be left out. Carl McClatchy then says he should keep Barkley out. Aaron Clark says no need to mess with a settled team. Jason O'Brien thinks that players should be fighting for places. And Matt Jay agrees with you. Barkley in for Traore. And also Deza Waters thinks the same. Alex Byrne says can't drop El Ghazi when he's got this much confidence, which, that's fair. But then we've seen the quality Ross Barkley had, and you think, well, how can he be on the bench if he's fit and available? And Traore has been decent as well. As much as he's not fully firing for 90 minutes a game, he's contributed in the last few weeks, and it's almost harsh to drop him as well.
Well, I suppose the other dilemma, I would do that. I'd bring Barkley back in. I'd put El Ghazi on the right and Grealish on the left. But the other dilemma is, does Mings come back in?
Well, yeah. Yeah, good point. Good question. Would you play him back there? Because Hawes has been very good as well.
I don't know which of the centre-halves you drop to bring him in.
Konsa and Mings is the duo, isn't it, on paper? They're the first choice. But Courtney Hawes has come in and been very good. So it seems harsh again to change that if they're playing well. They've only conceded for the first time today.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I suppose that Dean Smith could say is that you know, he does want to bring some fresh legs in, but Konsa's not played that much football lately, yeah. So he's fresh. You know, Courtney Hawes has played, you know, a lot more games than he was probably expecting to play over Christmas. I'd probably be inclined to leave the back four the same. I know they've been breached today, but I don't think there was some last ditch defending and some brave blocks. But I thought they defended pretty well considering how much of the ball Chelsea had. I mean, I reckon Chelsea probably had 60-70% possession today. Let me have a little look at the stats.
Doing a lot of research now. This isn't like you. Is this new year, new Matt Kendrick?
I'm working today, though, ain't I? That's the thing.
Oh, is that the difference? You actually got your brain switched on.
64% possession to 36%.
For Chelsea?
Yeah, I'd be inclined to leave the back four the same. In fact, I'd probably be inclined to leave most of the team the same, except you'd probably bring Barkley back in.
But then there is the point that other teams are making changes and Villa are sticking with what they've got. And is that going to catch up with us at some point?
Yeah, well, we'll be 25 points clear at the top, mate, by the time we catch up with it, won't we?
What did you think of the leadership in the organisation then? Because I think that's probably what we miss with Tyrone Mings the most. I think Hawes and Konsa are probably a decent combination defensively, but everyone knows what Tyrone Mings brings in terms of his leadership and his organisation. Do you think we had that in other areas? I know that the commentators mentioned that they could hear McGinn shouting. I don't know whether that's a thing or not, but yeah, does he replace that?
I can't say I particularly noticed who was leading the way, but equally, I didn't see an Aston Villa team in disarray.
Yeah, true.
So, what was I going to say? I just McGinn's turkey outfit has just popped into my mind.
It's crazy, isn't it? Me and Dad said that, like, you wouldn't, when you watch him play, you wouldn't imagine what he's like off the pitch, that on Christmas Day he's running around in a turkey outfit, and then the next couple of games, he's absolutely running the show, and he's this aggressive little, I think they called him a bulldozer on Amazon tonight, that he's just powers through the midfield and does a bit of everything. It's just like two different people, isn't it? John McGinn, the footballer, and John McGinn, the person.
Yeah, he's proper personality, though, isn't he? I like that. I like footballers that are likeable, not only for, you know, their performance and their character and their ability on the field. But, you know, life's serious enough, isn't it? As it is, you like somebody who can kind of just have a laugh and be that kind of, that figure of fun. I think, you know, there's been a bit of flack flying Steve Bruce's way in recent weeks because, you know, I think he's come out with his kind of mass hysteria claim for the pressure he's under at Newcastle. And a few people have spotted that obviously he said that at Villa and he said that at Sunderland as well. But it's still his great farewell gift, John McGinn, bringing John McGinn to Aston Villa. You know, regardless what people think of Steve Bruce, you know, that kind of parting gift. He's been brilliant, hasn't he?
Would you say that was Steve Bruce's best moment at Villa, signing John McGinn? You're on the spot a little bit there. I can't, like, no specific games come to mind. He didn't get us promoted, got to the playoff final, I guess, but if you don't win it, it's kind of pointless.
Certainly his best signing, wasn't it? There were lots of good moments for Steve. I don't want to turn this into a Steve Bruce podcast. Lots of good moments for Steve Bruce, beating Wolves. Wolves were runaway leaders and Villa smashed them at Villa Park, didn't they, that season? But anyway, moving on.
What do you think of Ollie Watkins? A couple of comments asked about him. Is he worth dropping now? Maybe trying something different? Maybe Keenan Davis coming in is the only option, or El Ghazi going up front or something weird like that? To me,
I don't know why you bring. Yeah. the only way where Keenan Davis matches Ollie Watkins is that he can run the flanks and he can make the ball stick. I think Ollie Watkins is better at running the back, making a ball stick anyway, as well as being a goal threat, you know, making intelligent runs, being a pretty sharp finisher despite a couple of chances going begging lately. I thought today he was worth his kind of weight, just the way he defended the front post from...
Yeah, the pressing was excellent, I thought.
From set pieces. Yeah, listen, does he... I don't think he want to rest, to be honest. I think he kind of fancy himself against Man United to see what he can do there. So this comes back to the issue that Villa have got, and you know, with Wesley still not ready, Keenan Davis is the only alternative that you've got. I don't think he's a good enough alternative to leave Ollie Watkins out.
Yeah, and as much as I don't want to diss Keenan Davis, when Ollie Watkins isn't scoring goals, you don't look at Keenan Davis and go, oh, there's a goal scorer sat on the bench, let's get him in, because he doesn't add goals either. He will offer the same things Watkins does, but not as good, like you said.
And Villa are scoring goals anyway.
But Villa are still doing well and playing well. He was very good against Crystal Palace, and there's comments coming in saying the same as what we've just said, because they're a little bit behind. The press from the front that Ollie Watkins brings is as good as anything as well, and that will create space for other players, and that is what happens. His goals will come at some point. I think it's a shame he's probably not been given a penalty here or there in the last couple of games, when I think El Ghazi took the one against Wolves, was it? I can't remember. Just to get his confidence back up and get him back on the score sheet. But the goals will come for Watkins, so I'm pretty convinced of that.
Confidence anyway.
I don't. And the hard work he brings is as important.
I think he just knows it's a kind of occupational hazard as a centre forward. You'll go through Timo Werner stages in your career, won't you? I'd back him. I'd back him all the way, whether he's scoring goals or not. And it's interesting from the stat that's pointed out tonight that I think, with the exception of the Burnley game, when Villa kind of, you know, almost got a battered the door down but couldn't score, and the Leeds game when the mighty master that's Marcelo Bielsa came along and did a job on Villa. Villa scored in every single game.
Yeah. Than that.
So. Yeah, I don't know what point I'm making. I just kind of peepered out there.
I just want to look at the next few fixtures. Hopefully that's come up on screen. Yes, it has. Good. There's also a dog barking. Apologies if you can hear it. So I've got Man United up next on Friday night. It was moved from the Saturday night or Saturday afternoon, I think, in the league. Then it's the FA Cup third round against Liverpool, which I didn't realise it snuck up on so quick. I just saw a comment saying we need to make changes against Liverpool. And I was thinking, oh God, when is that? That's the 8th of January, and I would expect there were changes made there. We'll come to that in a second. And Tottenham, Everton, Burnley, Southampton and West Ham. It's a tricky run of seven fixtures there. Just going through those in order, Man United on Friday. Is it just a case of stopping Bruno Fernandes and we've got a chance? Or are Man United better than that?
It's just a case of stopping him from fouling himself in the Villa box, I think. That's the main thing. Yeah. Now, listen, you know, United look like they've found a new lease of life and, you know, fancy themselves as outsiders for a title challenge. So it's not going to be straightforward there. But again, it's a bit like tonight's game. You'd back Villa to go there to be tight at the back and to create chances. So again, Villa play the way they played tonight. They've got, what are we today? Are we Monday today? They've got four days to try and get some energy back in the legs. But I think Villa can, I mean, I suppose Villa were a poor team in Premier League terms last season and still went to Old Trafford and got a draw and perhaps could have won the game. So you'd imagine this Villa team can go there and fancy the chances of getting a win. I don't know about changes for Liverpool. You know, after the United game, you've got a week to prepare for the Liverpool game, and then you've got 5 days before the Tottenham game. You know, depends. Are Villa going to win the league? Are they going to win the FA Cup? I'm not sure what the priority is, but I'd fancy this. I'm going to put the bloody curse on it now, but I'd fancy us for a cup run this year if we take it with, you know, we take it seriously. And this is where I kind of fall into kind of old traditional Matt again, because Christ, I really want us to go. I really want us to go win that competition.
Winning the FA Cup get you into Europe?
Say again?
Does winning the FA Cup get you into Europe?
Yeah, Villa will be in Europe anyway.
That's what I was thinking. I wonder whether it would drop us out of go to somebody else. It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think you probably want to look at making some changes just because it's a cup game and you want to keep players fresh at a busy time of the year. But then Liverpool will make changes as well, won't they? You'd have thought. I know they take the FA Cup more seriously than the Papa John's Cup or whatever the other one's called these days. Is that it? Papa John's Trophy or something?
No, it's still the Carabao Cup, Dan.
Oh, is it actually? Oh,
yeah. Papa John's is the old Johnston's Paint, I think, isn't it?
Okay. I thought they changed the League Cup this year as well. Is that not?
Have they?
I thought they changed it. Is it not, I'm sure it's the pizza thing, the Pizza Hut.
It might be, isn't it?
I'm sure it is. Anyway, I always think of it as the Carling Cup for some reason. That's what I always call it, just because that's what it used to be back in the day as well. But yeah, Liverpool take that more seriously than they do the FA Cup. So you think they won't make, they're not going to play the kids, for example, but they'll make changes because they just will. So that's still an opportunity for Villa to get through. And if they do, you'd look to hope that they take it more seriously. Out of all those, though, what do you think is the most difficult game there? So they're all tough games, I think.
It's no easy games in this league, mate.
Ah, oh, love it. Yeah. Love the show.
Next game, take each game as it comes. I don't know. This is Aston Villa 2020-2021, isn't it? Who knows? God, they can take on anybody, you know. I don't know. I think if Villa, who are the next three league games? United away, Tottenham at home, and Everton at home. You know, I'd take 5 points from those, and I'd be pretty chuffed, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. So, I think Tottenham's probably the hardest there. I think. Just because I think they'll be hard to break down. That's the thing.
Bore us into submission, won't they?
Yeah, I think we're all right when teams play into us a little bit. And I would expect that from Man United, Liverpool, Everton. Burnley will also be difficult again just to break them down. In Southampton, we've seen what they can do. And West Ham just annoy me because of the RL thing that we've had. We've had other people come in with their suggestions, what the cup is called. So some of these mean nothing to me because they're before my time, so I don't know whether they're even true or not. Jason O'Brien says Milk Cup. Is that a
Milk
thing?
Cup. Blimey, it was a thing back in the day, yeah. Worthington's Cup. Carling
Cup. Rumble-O's.
Rumble-O's Cup. Simard Cup.
We've got Papa James. We've also got Littlewood's Cup. Is that a thing?
Yeah, blimey.
Wow. Coca-Cola Cup, of course. Yeah, that's a famous one.
And demographic older than I thought.
I know, yeah. It really is. It's just the Carling Cup to me. That's what I remember. When we went to the cup final with Martin O'Neill, that was the Carling Cup, wasn't it? Or was that the semi-final? Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. We're going down a stupid rabbit hole here. How do I get this comment off the screen? Generally, though, overall, to get out of here, happy with the point against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, Matt?
Yeah, really, really satisfied, especially with Villa going behind and achy breaky legs. After a busy schedule, I'm pleased. Let's just look at the Premier League table, Dan. It's just remarkable.
Bear with me.
You know, we're going into 2021.
Aston Villa fifth. Yeah, with two games in hand over Leicester, one game in hand over Everton and Liverpool. If we win those two games in hand, we'd be top of the league.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Hey, just as a slight aside, have you had any snow fun today?
No, I've had snow fun, Matt.
What you've done there?
I've barely even left the house because I've not been working. I've just been lying around doing nothing. My parents went to walk the dog in the snow, and he loved it. And I was like, oh, it's too cold. And then you don't enjoy it, do you, when you get older?
Don't you? I might go for a slushy walk. When really? I might go for a slushy walk. We've got a skip on our drive at the moment, and it's not got very good drainage on it, so it looks like the world's worst, dirtiest slush puppy. What was I going to say?
You've got young kids. I don't think you go out and play in the snow when you get to 25.
Yeah, my kids have been over Liso's Park today and sending me pictures and videos of it while I've been grafting.
Yeah. You've worked hard, haven't you, the last couple of days?
I've been proofreading stories. I've been cropping photos, honestly. Really? I've not had a drink. I've not had a drink for days. And I'm as part of the new health kick, I'm not having a drink outside of Fridays and Saturdays. Is it nearly Friday? I'm gasping.
After Man United, you can have one then. I'll have one on the podcast with you.
Deal. And what else are you going to say? To try and lose weight as well, I've started reaching for, the cracky nuts?
Yeah, yeah.
You know when you get nuts at Christmas and you've got a... God, it's such... All food should be like that.
You have to break it.
Yeah, that you have to kind of find a way to break into it and kind of, reward yourself with it. Just to pull him back a little bit of plastic wrapping don't do for me. Anyway, are we done?
Yeah, we're done. We were probably done about 15 minutes ago. A little half an hour episode. I do enjoy these post-match ones. They always descend into a bit of a ramble. I said at the start there'd be more waffling here than Jim Beglin's commentary, and proved it correctly at the end there. Thanks everyone for joining us live on Facebook or YouTube this evening on Monday. If you're watching this after the fact, this will be out obviously on Monday night as well, but please do go over to iTunes or Spotify and leave us a review. It's very much appreciated. Don't mention that I cough during the podcast though, because that's very unprofessional. But it is live, and that's proof it's live. Also, the dog barking. McGinn, excellent performance. I'm not just saying that for the audio listeners. Matt just held up a beer mat with McGinn's name on. You've really got to watch these podcasts, though, I think, because there's so much stupid visual nonsense as well. But yeah, if you are listening, get involved. Leave us reviews on iTunes, all the rest of it. Leave us comments on YouTube. Matt's still holding things up. He's just distracting me at this point. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in live. Thank you, Matt, for joining me. And we'll be back again on Friday evening after we've beat Man United 6-0 for the first time at Old Trafford. Thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa!